Welcome back to This Green Earth. I'm Nell Larson.
And I'm Chris Cherniak.
That's right. And joining us in the studio for the first half of the show today is Dr. Mackenzie Skiles. She's with the University of Utah and recently published a report concluding that dust from the Great Salt Lake can accelerate our snowmelt here in the Wasatch by as much as 25%. So, Mackenzie, welcome and thanks for coming in.
It's nice to be here.
So let's start with the background here. Why focus on dust on snow? Why is our snow so critical here?
Along the Wasatch Front, we receive over 80% of our water resources from snowmelt seasonally. So it's really critical in terms of hydrology and water resource availability. I think most people also realize that it's really important for our economy. We get over $1 billion annually from the snow sports industry. And globally speaking, snow is on the decline. It's melting earlier and faster, and it's really important to understand what's driving those processes. And it's due in part to snow getting darker over time.
Hmm. And so this is not the first place or time that you've done this kind of research, right?
Right. I have studied it many places globally, but really in great detail in the southern Colorado Rockies, which is headwaters for the Colorado River.
So how does one go about, you know, measuring the color of the snow or how much dust is deposited on the snow?
Yeah, well, there's a couple different ways to do it. One of the more fun ones is to actually go out and dig a snow pit. And
we all love field work.
Right, exactly. To go out and look at the dust layers in the snowpack, the timing of dust deposition, and then you collect those samples and see how much dust is actually there. And you can also use remote sensing. So satellites looking at the Earth, you can see how much darker the snow gets because snow itself is so bright. Anything that darkens the snow surface, we can see from space. So there's a couple different ways that we can monitor dust deposition, both directly and indirectly.
So dust is obviously ubiquitous to the area. And in an urban setting, there's dust from emissions from vehicles and industry and such. What is it about this study that, you know, was different or looked at the relationship between dust and snow in a different way?
Yeah, so I think that a lot of people assume that dust is a natural aerosol, and then we also get aerosols from human activity and industrial activity. But here, what was unique about this study is that we found that dust was coming from the exposed dry lake bed of the Great Salt Lake. So previously, if the Salt Lake had maintained its historical extent, this wouldn't be a dust source. And we also know across the broader western U.S. that there is more dust associated with surface disturbance. So originally that was more grazing, and now it could be off-highway vehicle use or oil and gas industry.
Like
anything.
You say, agricultural tilling
agricultural
activities.
Tilling. We also see some relationship with fire scars and increased dust emission. But there's a clear link between increased dust and human activity.
Okay, so... So what is it about the dust from Great Salt Lake that is different from, say, the dust from an urban setting?
Yeah, the link to human activity here is that we are using more water upstream before it gets to the Great Salt Lake. And there are no protections at this point to maintain a certain lake level. There's no water rights for the lake. Hmm. So as long as we keep using water upstream, there'll be more dry lake bed exposed, and that will continue to be a dust source into the future.
Now, there are other places in the world that have dealt with these dry lake beds as well, right? So what's going on there?
The you're right. Globally, saline lakes are declining. The Salton Sea is another example that many people might be familiar with. And because they're not a freshwater resource for us, they tend to lack protections. We tend to want to, you know, control and build infrastructure for the freshwater, and don't necessarily think about these dry lake bed or the lake beds and what could happen. And it's not just dust deposition or dust emission from these dry lake beds. There's whole ecosystems involved with these saline lakes. But so far, there hasn't been any protections put in place here to maintain a certain lake level.
So we could, you know, in an extreme case, just continue to let the lake go down and down and down and down until it's just, you know, non-existent or a little puddle.
Right.
Really small. So that also, of course, impacts, I mean, this is getting a little off track, right? But there's an enormous, like, fishery mm-hmm. for the brine shrimp. There's recreation, all these other things as well.
Habitat loss.
Yep. Right. So. We know that's first on my list.
Yeah. It should be.
Yeah. Yeah.
But so there's all these knock-on effects to the lake receding. And it's incredible that the lake, we said in the intro, is one-third of its former size, you know, in relationship to, say, 100 or 150 years ago. It's fallen. Another study suggested that it's fallen 11 feet in depth. You know, in effect, it's losing, but it's losing depth too. 11 feet of water loss, like you say, because it has no water rights.
Right.
It's last on the list.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So now the dust. You say you went out and collected samples. Are you actually looking at the dust underneath a microscope and parsing out the different type of dust?
We are doing a couple of different things. We have I run a study plot up near Alta. It's an outwater study plot, and that's where we look really closely at the snow and where we dig snow pits and collect samples. We also have an aerosol sampler, so we're measuring dust that's in the air and dust that gets into the snow. And once we pull those samples back into my lab at the University of Utah, we do a couple different things. We filter out the snow so that just the dust is left behind.
Mm-hmm.
That's a concentration that tells us how much mass is actually deposited.
Mm-hmm.
We also analyze for something called black carbon, which is more commonly known as soot.
Mm-hmm.
And so that is typically from industrial sources. So that separates it from what might be coming from the dry lake bed. And we can look for other things as well. We can look for iron content. We look at color of dust. And all of these help us parse out impacts due to dust versus other aerosols, and then how much dust it actually takes to accelerate the snow melt at the study plot.
And that differs in differing places. You mentioned before we came on air this morning, you know, in Colorado, it's more of a red dust, and here it's like a, I don't know.
More of a yellow-brown dust.
Yeah.
It's not quite as dark. It's not that iron-rich sort of red dust that we associate with southern Utah and sort of the red deserts.
And the lighter the dust, the more reflective it is, and the less heat that it absorbs. So
exactly.
There's a relationship there.
Right.
It means something.
Yeah. Snow is the brightest right. natural surface on Earth. And anytime you put anything darker, which is just about anything, on the snow surface, it will accelerate melt because it's actually the sun that drives snow melt, not mm-hmm. air temperature. And so the darker something is, the more impact it will have for the same mass. So if you have the same amount of this really dark, iron-rich red dust versus this sort of lighter, more brown or yellow dust, the red dust will have a greater impact.
So let's talk a little bit more about the results. How much did you find, you know, that this dust is impacting our snow melt?
It's a great question. So we found that over this 2017 snow melt season that there were 5 total dust deposition events. And you could usually pick these out if you're down in the Salt Lake Valley. You can see that the dust is coming in. And we really focused in on this one dust event because we knew that winds and dust were coming in from the west, indicating that it could have been coming from the dry lake bed of the Great Salt Lake. This event also stood out because it was half of all dust deposited in one season. So it was a pretty big dust event. And due to this just one event, from sampling the snow and sampling the dust, I was able to partition the impact from this single dust event. And that advanced melt by 1 week, just to one dust event. And we do know from some atmospheric modeling that we did that dust deposition was actually probably heavier in the northern Wasatch, north of our site. So it probably was even a bigger impact up there, but we didn't have the snow samples up there to assess how much dust was deposited.
If you just joined us, we're speaking with Dr. Mackenzie Skiles. She's an assistant professor in the Department of Geography at the University of Utah. We're talking about a study. She was the primary author. She had a number of co-authors with you that looks at the impacts of dust on snowmelt, in this case specifically the impacts of dust coming from a shrinking Great Salt Lake basin, lake bed. So I mean, you said 25% increase in snowmelt
mm-hmm.
from this dust, just the dust related to the Great Salt Lake?
The 25% is dust, is the dust from all dust events. And then we were able to constrain the timing, that 1 week advanced melt, due to the one dust event.
Okay.
It's amazing to me that a single, you know, weather event, dust event, can shorten our ski season, our snow season by a week. I mean, that's enormous.
Yeah. I think that it has really important hydrologic implications, because currently our runoff models don't account for this impact. But it also has, you know, sort of a more personal and economic impact. We don't necessarily like looking at dirty snow up in the mountains, and also people don't really like to ski on dirty snow. It could lead to earlier closures of ski resorts. Mm-hmm. And so it has a broad range of impacts beyond, you know, just water availability.
Is this so much dust that you visually can see it, or is this something that you're really not observing until you get it under a microscope?
That's a good question. I think that if anyone who's been skiing for a while in the Wasatch can remember times when there's dirty snow or dust layers in the snowpack, and there is enough dust here that you can visually see it. You can't necessarily see all of the aerosols. Usually there's not enough black carbon or soot to see visually,
right.
But the dust you can see, and it deposits pretty evenly over the mountains.
It does. But you said this was more concentrated in the northern part of the Wasatch?
We think that the dust from, specifically from the dry lake bed of the Great Salt Lake, at least from our atmospheric modeling, shows us that more of that dust probably went to the northern Wasatch.
And for those who don't know what northern, what range are you talking about?
So the study plot at Alta is just a little south of the lake. And when the winds blew in from the west, more of that dust was carried directly to the west. So more towards Ogden and Logan and up towards the Utah-Idaho border.
Oh, okay. And in terms of storm, you say these are storms that have a westerly component to them. And so this is dust that could be kicked up prior to the storm coming. And then even afterwards, you know, when you get a lot of systems here, of course, you get the wetter part is the more southern fetch of the storm. But then as the low passes through, the winds shift to the west and then to the northwest. And so it could be post-storm event dust kicking
up,
too.
That's exactly what happened with this event. We originally saw dust coming from the south, and that was the prefrontal winds. And then the winds shifted after the front passed through, and
right.
That's what we call post-frontal winds.
Right.
The post-frontal winds were coming almost directly from the west, and that is what brought the dust from the dry lake bed.
So it's like, so the snow falls, sets, and then the dust comes and
exactly.
sets on top of it.
Exactly.
And then, like you say, it's interesting. It's not necessarily air temperature that produces a lot of snow melt. It's sunlight. So those bluebird days,
exactly.
which are we all love and appreciate here from a recreational and, say, you know, mental aspect or so, those are the ones that have impact on melt greater than temperature.
Exactly. And I think if people think about it, it is intuitive. You know, if you go outside on a sunny day in a white shirt, and then you change your shirt to a black shirt, you're going to be warmer in the black shirt because
yeah.
it's absorbing more sunlight. And it's the same thing with the snowpack. We make this, you know, sort of assumption that it's warming air temperatures in the spring that's melting snow, but those warming air temperatures are related to longer days and more sun. And so as we get longer days and more sun in the spring, and we also get this dust deposition that's darkening the snowpack, it's sort of a, you know, a perfect combination to lead to accelerated snowmelt.
So we've talked about the Great Salt Lake bed and then mentioned some of these other sources of dust, you know, agricultural disturbance or off-road vehicle use or whatever else. Do you have a sense of what the other main sources or drivers of dust creation are for the Wasatch?
Yeah, we do know. We do know that dust is related to human activity. And here in the Wasatch, it's sort of twofold, right? It's the shrinking dry lake bed, but then it's also any sort of surface disturbance. So one of the largest dust producers was the Milford Flat fire scar. So there was a big fire, and then they tried to till it to turn it back into an active agricultural area, and through that tilling they basically just broke up these surface soils that were inherently stable, and it led to it being a point dust source. You could see it, this dust emission just cranking out of the Milford Flat Fire Scar.
Sure.
Any time that there's sort of a dry, arid, or semi-arid region that gets disturbed, it makes that dust more available for transport. And depending on where the winds come from, that dust could be blowing directly into the Wasatch Mountains, especially dust sources to the south of us, and then again, the dry lake bed and the Great Salt Lake Desert to the west.
So it's a week earlier here, you know, we're seeing. But again, you've mentioned that's not as severe as some of the other places that you've looked at.
Right. When I've been studying the impacts of dust on snow in the southern Rockies for over 10 years now. And there, we've looked at it very closely. And we know that dust accelerates snowmelt by a month on average and up to 2 months in the most extreme dust years.
So that's just like mind blowing.
That's astounding, because and when you think about dust or other particulate matter, it settles on snow. As the snow melts, the dust doesn't go anywhere. It just accumulates, right? So
exactly.
Actually the snow gets darker and darker, and that accelerates melting even more.
Exactly. And that is related to just the particle size of the dust. It doesn't get pulled down in the meltwater as liquid water flows through the snowpack. It just stays behind at the surface. So as snow melts, all of those previously deposited layers that could have been buried all come to the surface. And it just keeps getting darker and darker as the snow starts to melt. And so there's this compounding process that's happening that just keeps accelerating snow melt.
So in Colorado, it sounds like they're maybe a little ahead of us in thinking about this issue. Are there any kind of like, is there any action taking place or efforts to minimize the dust on the snow?
That's a great question. Mm. I do think that people are aware that there's more dust in the air now than there was previously. And we're sort of pinpointing what could be leading to more dust. Mm-hmm. But I'm not aware of any specifically or specific policy that's taken place to address this increased dust deposition.
That awareness is always the first piece. And again, we were chatting before the show, like, this isn't something you hear a lot about here. You know, mm-hmm. You don't hear about the drying lake bed. We don't talk a lot about the dust on snow. So it's a good conversation to be having.
Yeah, I hope that I hope to change that conversation. And I would love if this brought more awareness to the implications of a shrinking Great Salt Lake, because it is kind of something it's easy to ignore, I think, especially right. If you don't spend time out at the Great Salt Lake or you don't think about the ecosystem that's going on out there. You know, we're really worried about capturing this fresh water before it gets to the lake. But there's these broader implications that might not be quite as obvious until you suss out those connections.
Final minute. What's the next step? An additional study in this area?
Yeah. So we focus really on one single dust event. For this most recent paper, and now we're really interested in getting a more holistic view of all of the dust sources and the broader impact and expanding up into the northern Wasatch where, you know, we don't know exactly what impact dust is having yet.
All right. Dr. Mackenzie Skiles, she is assistant professor of geography at the University of Utah. Is the paper available online?
The paper is available online. It's open access. It's in Environmental Research Letters.
Okay. All right. Thank you so much.
Yes, thank you for having me. It was a pleasure.
All right. We'll stay in touch. Let's take a break.